pictured this. A recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience! Thank you very much! Thank you! Thank you! And I hear Donald Trump, the man who names all his businesses after himself, is being sued by his wife. Apparently she wants 50% of Trump Towers, 75% of Trump Airlines, and Windy Miller. And now, Punt and Dennis.
There is currently an alarming trend sweeping the planet. Over the last year, we have all become increasingly aware that we are facing a major upheaval in the way we live. Slowly but surely, the world is becoming nice.
The signs of creeping niceness are everywhere. Glasnost, withdrawal from Afghanistan, events in Eastern Europe, South Africa, the end of the Iran-Iraq war, arms negotiations, European unity. Despite the heroic efforts of Mrs. Thatcher to hang on to the old... To hang on to the old-fashioned nastiness, we are facing a nice revolution.
Now, this has been creeping up on us all the way through the 80s. Look at young people's heroes. At one time, teenagers' role models were anti-establishment rebels, out to shock. The 50s had James Dean. The 60s had Jagger. The 70s had Sid Vicious and Blakey from On the Buses. But who are children asked to admire now? Philip Schofield. Let's face it, it's impossible to imagine Philip Schofield being anti-establishment.
Hello, welcome to Going Live. Later on in the programme, Gordon the Gopher will be showing you how to smoke crack.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience says it's time to nip this niceness thing in the bud now. Nice people are dull people. Human beings aren't naturally nice. If they were, there wouldn't have been any need for the Ten Commandments. Or at the very least, the offences would have been much less interesting.
Moses, thou shalt deliver these commandments unto thy people. Thou shalt not sniff in a sort of irritating way. Thou shalt not do more than 30 in a built-up area. Thou shalt not finish off the hobnobs and then pretend there weren't any left.
The world just would not have been the same if people had been nice. The foggy streets of East London in Victorian times would have been stalked by Jack the Bottom Pincher. While medieval crusaders, instead of slaughtering thousands of infidels, would have given them copies of the Watchtower and asked them to think about Jesus. If the world carries on becoming nice at its current rate, then in the future, life for some people will never be the same again.
Ah, good evening, Mr. Bond. I've been expecting you. You see the man-eating great white shark in this pool?
I see him, Blofeld.
Do you want to watch him jump through the hoop balancing a ball on his nose?
There are signs that an anti-niceness backlash is beginning. Politicians, alarmed at the prospect of a nice world, have gone to the United Nations and demanded the setting up of a special UN troublemaking force, who, in the event of countries being peaceful and calm, will be parachuted in to try and stir it up a bit.
Beirut, extremist Shiite militia today claimed responsibility for serving tea and biscuits to Christian forces. The United Nations are sending in some high explosive shells. This is Michael Brunson in the Aqualand Fun Park, Beirut.
In the meantime, however, it looks as if we're going to have to put up with the world continuing to turn nice at an alarming rate. It seems to have permeated everywhere, even into the most unlikely of places, British football terraces, which are resounding to new chants.
We love you, Chelsea. We do. We love you, Chelsea. We do. But we acknowledge that other people feel just as strongly about their team, and we sympathise with that loyalty. Good-natured barracking is all part of the atmosphere, Brian.
This.
And now, the embarrassment experience. Now, embarrassment is a modern condition of being. In history, it seems, people simply were never embarrassed.
Lord Nelson is hit. He lies dying.
My lord, has England's greatest admiral any last request?
Yes. Kiss me, Hardy.
I'm sorry.
Kiss me, Hardy.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really that way, although not that I've got anything against those who like
oh,
to.
Oh, come on, Hardy, don't be so uptight. Just a little peck, not a Frenchie. All right, mouth open, but no tongue.
Go on, Hardy, go on. Snog.
All right, then.
The modern meaning of the word, as in to feel uncomfortably self-conscious, was not present in the old word, embarrass, which simply meant to hinder, as in the phrase, to embarrass Napoleon's forces. Although we may have got this wrong.
So, generals, we have almost succeeded. What is the latest news of Wellington and the English?
Well, mon emperor, they are presently in the field erecting their new weapon.
Aha! That does not frighten me. What is it, a giant catapult?
No, it is a huge photo of you when you were 5 years old.
Oh, no! Not the one of me wearing the shirt with the huge collar!
Oui, mon emperor, and the kipper tie.
Oh, no! I look like Peter Beardsley in it!
Here comes a soldier. Look, his arms have been blown off.
No, I always stand like this when I present the best show in the world. It can only be one, of course, Rapido.
One situation which is a nexus of embarrassment is dancing. Firstly, you're embarrassed for yourself, and secondly, you're embarrassed for the bloke or woman dancing opposite. This is true wherever you're dancing.
Welcome to the Royal Festival Hall for the premiere performance of this production of Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake. In Act One, the swan, played by Dame Margot Fonteyn, enters, puts her handbag on the floor, and beckons to her slaggy friends to join her. Meanwhile, on the edge of the dance area are several ducks. Some of these have started dancing, but others can be seen bobbing their heads a bit as if they're not sure whether they're dancing or not. Then suddenly, in a superb coup de théâtre, on comes Nureyev, thinking he's bloody Michael Jackson.
Another arena of embarrassment is the street, particularly tripping over the pavement. When people trip over, they always pretend they haven't. They sort of incorporate a hop, skip and jump into their walk for the rest of the day. And another terrible experience is talking to a friend, but then they go away, but you don't notice. So you carry on talking and end up saying, "I really, really like you, you know," to a bag lady. But the most embarrassing thing that can ever happen to anyone in any situation is to have an unknown bogey. Even someone who seems otherwise unconquerable can be floored by the information that they have a bogey.
Go ahead, punk. Make my... What? Where is it? Oh, my God, why didn't you tell me?
The bogey is the ultimate anarchist. It subverts dignity on every level.
Hello. My husband and I would like at this time of year... What? Where? On the tiara. Oh, I thought that was a diamond.
Despite its prevalence, the bogey remains historically invisible. People never seem to have had their portraits painted with a bogey. There are also certain styles of bogey. There is, for example, the SAS snot, so-called, because it abseils out of the nose and dangles back and forth in front of the mouth.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience. Wow!
This week, the Royal Shakespeare Company announced that they were going to have to close down for 4 months. Good. Shakespeare's 400-year-old plays are one of those things that not only survive, but actually get propped up by the taxpayer for exactly the same reason that Prince Charles thinks we should all live in thatched cottages. The thoroughly British obsession with the idea that if it's old, it must be good.
This idea is demonstrably untrue. Look at the repeats of Some Mothers Do Have 'Em. Look at most High Court judges. Look at the Austin Maxi. The same goes for 400-year-old things. Look at bubonic plague. Look at public executions. Look at the Austin Maxi.
Shakespeare has achieved that most coveted of cultural privileges, that of being something that no one actually likes, but everyone has to pretend they do. Like opera or Tracy Chapman. Unbelievably tedious, but ideological heresy to say so.
Mind you have to feel a bit sorry for the actors who'll be thrown out of work by the RSC's decision. After all, there are very few jobs that a trained Shakespearean performer can do very well.
The train now standing at platform 4 is the 11:46 to Manchester Piccadilly. It will call at Watford. Fair Watford, nestled in hills and pastures. Jewel of South Hertfordshire, thou most favourite of nature's counties.
Get up,
It will call it rugby. Thou saucy city of sporting namesakes fame, whose title doth echo far and wide wherever men do play that noble game. Birmingham International. Change here for the National Exhibition Centre. Vast halls for display of wares wonderful. Birmingham New Street. Stafford. My Lord Stafford, sayst thou? Ha! I jest, my friend. And Manchester Pit. Oh, shit, the train's gone.
This is a song of fear and sadness. It's called David Essex. She was impressed by my Armani suit and my wet look gel. I took her home. We turned the lights down low. Things were going well. She said, let's play some music. I whispered, yes. There's a Spanish import talking head somewhere. There's my bootleg Brian Eno, my psychedelic furs, and a limited release Cocteau Twins. But she found my ELO. I could have sworn I'd taken it out, but I should have known that there's a crap record in every collection, and it's the one that always slightly sticks out. I rushed in and pulled out my Lou Reed test pressing, then pushed it back because behind it was London Town by Wings. She said, let's play some singles, and I went cold because I hadn't checked the singles behind her. And I knew that somewhere in there was Dennis Waterman singing the theme tune to Minder. And she found it. I tried to stop her picking it up, but I knocked the record rack. And the one that rolled out was my Andrew Lloyd Webber playing his theme tune to the 78 World Cup. And suddenly there were all the crappiest records which I'd taken out before she came. Imperial Wizard by David Essex, the best of the kids from fame. They're like a naked wound was my Buggles LP, but I knew the worst was right at the back. And I played my 15 Top of the Pops, sung by other people. Albums wouldn't fall in a pack, but they fell down. And there was my Marillion LP. And my Marillion. And my Marillion, yes, I bought all three. And I said, hey girl, let's make love to this one, in an attempt to save the situation. But then I turned to see I pulled out Noel Edmonds' funny phone in compilation. And as she slammed the door, I cried, hey girl, don't you see that it's a given truth? We've all got crap records in our record collection. Or perhaps it's just me. Thanks very much.
Okay, can we just ask you if you've heard of the Mary Whitehouse Experience?
No, I haven't.
All right.
I'm sure it's pretty bad.
I'm sure it's pretty bad. Really, why is that?
What, Mary Whitehouse?
Yeah.
Well, I think she's a rather a spoiled sport. I think, really, she doesn't have a very good sex life herself.
No.
Everybody else's.
Yeah.
Most people who are obsessed by certain things, it always reflects more on them than on others.
Right. Do you have any obsessions yourself?
No, none, except for my bicycle.
This is Vince Radio. Can I ask you what you think of the Mary Whitehouse Experience?
What about the Mary Whitehouse Experience?
Have you heard of it before? It's a radio. It's a show on Radio One. What do you think? Do you think you'd like it?
I've heard it, so I can't make no comment.
Excuse me. Can I ask you? Have you heard of a show on Radio One called the Mary Whitehouse Experience?
No.
No. Have you?
No.
Have you heard of Radio One?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Can I ask you? Have you heard of a show on Radio One called the Mary Whitehouse Experience?
No.
Do you ever listen to the radio?
No,
not the radio. Television.
Yeah, what's your favourite show on the television?
What's your favourite show?
What programmes do you like?
I like them all.
Really? All of them?
I like the comedy ones, Bear.
Yeah, really?
Sid James and all that, like.
Sid James, yeah, yuck, funny, mate, yeah. What other comedies do you like?
I like the Bing Crosby, Bobo. Bing Crosby's not alive, right?
No, he's not. No, no. Heart attack on the golf course.
Yeah, he did die.
Not so much now. No. He's more sort of laying down and decomposing. Very good. But,
We also had the mortgage rates going up, and the mortgage rates going up. I imagine all the bailiffs sitting around just going, better make it three shredded wheat this morning then. It's brilliant. The mortgage rates goes up. I can almost envisage all these people getting out their cardboard boxes down the embankment going, zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day. Going over to a banker going, here's 25p, have a cup of me. All right, mate. Also, here's a quick joke. What has 24 legs and a life expectancy of 12 hours? The jury at the Guinness trial. I thought it was incredible. They couldn't find anyone to stay around because there's a little, you know, they need a bit of time to get the Guinness trial going. I thought, well, Mike Gatting's got some time on his hands now, hasn't he? Ask him to do it. Gatting is just so unpopular, isn't he? He's more unpopular than Jeremy Beadle. In fact, Valentine's Day was the only day when he didn't get any anonymous letters. I just think when Gatting dies, everyone's going to be cheering and shouting. There'll be street parties going on, apart from Judas, who'll just be sitting there going, oh, no, I know he's going to come and talk to me. Also, I don't know whether you realise this, but apparently they've released Nelson Mandela. Did you know that? I didn't know. It's incredible. I just think they've gone completely overboard. They're treating it like a royal wedding, the president. And here's Nelson Mandela coming out of his house, and here's Nelson Mandela going here. Here's Nelson Mandela's first speech. Here's an in-depth interview with his mattress. Here's the recipe that he first cooked. You know, oh, no. I mean, it is important, but what's more important is to keep the sanctions. It's sanctions and the armed struggle that have actually forced de Klerk to change. De Klerk didn't wake up one morning and ding-dong, who's that at the door? Hello, have you heard the good news about Jesus? No, I haven't. You better come on in. 6 hours later... Oh, shit, I've been such a bastard. I'd better release the Nelson. Boxing is a really stupid sport because they actually damage each other. You look at all the old boxers, they're just mental invertebrates. I reckon for boxers, you just ought to give them $1 million and drill a hole in their head. Cut out the middleman. Because they're just mentally... And people go, oh, we don't watch it for the violence. Nah. Nah. It's a skill. It's a skill. Playing football with fag butts in a urinals is a skill. Just because something takes practice and body coordination does not make it worthwhile. But my mate at school could spit phlegm 5 feet in the air and catch it in his own mouth. Which is really difficult to do. But you wouldn't get that past the Olympic Committee, would you?
And now, as promised, part two of the school experience. 12:30, lunch break. Now, school dinners have always had a very bad press. Much great satire has been elicited from them by the likes of Richard Stilgo. But, in actual fact, school dinners, despite the fact that there was always a fishbone in the scoop of mashed potato, are invariably much nicer than anything cooked by your mother. Certainly in my house, where all my mother ever cooked was a large vat of water with a dead claw. It's true.
Not funny, but true. Dinner ladies, meanwhile, form a breed apart. They all seem to be washerwomen from the 18th century, portly, ruddy and obsessed with custard. And after dinner at school, I always felt like the young Louis XIV teased and titillated by old crones.
Hello, can I have a bit of gammon and tin pineapple and a scoop of mashed potato with a fishbone in it?
Ooh, let me tickle those little genitals. Ooh, I haven't had 150 hysterectomies. Custard! Wobbly, wobbly, wart!
That's it, you're going to have to go back to the palace, Queen Mother.
I liked it. 1:30, games. This means getting undressed in front of a lot of people of the same sex. At a boys' school, this means having to cope with the fact that one of the other boys will be prodigiously developed, not only for a young boy, but for a mammoth. At a girls' school, the girl who has to wear the training bra early on tends to be really embarrassed. At a boys' school, the boy who has to wear his dad's wife fronts has his name put up on the roll of honour with all the war dead. Also, at my school, if you had forgotten your swimming kit, you would be made to do it in the nuddy. Honestly, school is supposed to be a preparation for life. Ron Pickering.
And a setback for Duncan Goodhue in the final of this 100 metres butterfly. He's forgotten his trunks and the IAAF have ruled that he's got to do it in the nutty. And it looks like he hasn't even passed puberty. Oh, no. No, sorry. He's got that disease, hasn't he? Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Imagine... Stop hissing. Stop hissing. Imagine if they extended this regulation beyond the sporting arena.
There was uproar in the Commons today. Chancellor John Major arrived for his budget speech without his briefcase, and so had to do it in the nuddy. The Speaker said it was the worst thing he'd ever seen in the House of Commons.
Other people who have done it in the nuddy include Archbishop Robert Runcie when he forgot his staff, Brian Walden when he forgot his clipboard, and Cecil Parkinson who didn't forget anything but decided to do it in the nuddy anyway.
The changing room atmosphere is something that some men carry into later life. Like, you see these businessmen who've just played squash talking with complete equanimity about business as if they're not both in the nuddy. And this is why I don't think I could ever have cut it as a businessman.
Well, Rob, great game, good shower. Now, maybe I think we should go with Bolivian Zinc. Yeah, there's a lot of movement on Wall Street, and it looks to me like the whole thing could be a winner. What do you say?
Ooh, here's my fishy. Ooh, in a funny shape. Look, I can put it between my legs and do an impression of a girl.
I see. Well, I can offer you a good job at Guinness.
320, Language Lab, or as it's known, pretending to be a DJ. Although teaching kids to speak French via Longman's audiovisual French is now known to have caused certain problems when British schoolchildren actually visit France.
Excusez-moi, monsieur, où est le gare Saint-Lazare, s'il vous plaît?
C'est très facile, mon petit, on allait que...
Excusez-moi, monsieur, où est la gare Saint-Lazare, s'il vous plaît?
Oui, comme j'ai dit, on allait que...
Actually, I'm quite well behaved when I'm abroad. It's when I'm at home that I'm badly behaved, because I truly believe we've got a little bit of the carry-on camping left in all of us. Mrs. I mean, on the surface, we may appear to be normal, sane, retentive kind of people, but I have to say, you get me anywhere near a stick of rock and a kiss me quick hat, and I get the most irresistible urge to do the hokey-cokey. It's amazing how we all know the words to that song, even though we're prepared to swear on our filofaxes we've never sung it before in our lives. And the reason we know the words, well, the reason we know the words is because they're simple, aren't they? I mean, it's oh, oh, the hokey cokey. I think Stock Aitken Waterman wrote it. But the other reason we know the words is that basically it's passed down in our genes, because it's part of our national heritage, along with the incredible belief that the English football team are somehow the best in the world. And this is, of course, this is not true. Even I know this. We can't, simply cannot see the connection between always losing and being crap. It's like there has to be some other explanation. We have to be the best because we're England. Except, of course, when Scotland wins something and then all of a sudden we're Great Britain. Yeah, half the thrill of the holiday for me, anyway, is going somewhere where you can't understand the language, isn't it? Like Australia. No, I like this guy. This is nice. Actually, the thing is that what you're supposed to do, you're not supposed to be nasty to a heckler, be nice to them. I like you. I'd like you to have my babies. Yeah. Through your eye.
All right, the Punchline Experience. Before the show, the studio audience were asked to come up with a witty answer to the following joke. What should Perrier do with all their unused bottles? And I've collected them all up on bits of green paper, and the winner will win a prize, the Heavyweight Championship of the World. And so we start off, what should Perrier do with all their unused bottles? Fill them up using another tap. That's from Matt Mitchell. Melt them down and build a see-through glass water purification plant. Brackets in France. Brackets. B. McCormack. Well, he tried. I think obviously it meant something to him. Kind of get it over. Fill them with the water from the Thames and sell them back to the French. That's from Sue Newton, who was an EEC MP. What should Perrier do with all their unused bottles? Dear Nob Ruman, I love you, Christine, flat 14, Bedford Gardens, Kensington,
telephone 229, PS, where are all my Valentine's cards? Well, that was someone trifling with my emotions, listeners. Someone... Free. I'll put it in my pocket, yeah. Why? Patang. Or fill them with piss, like they normally do. Hey, you could even put messages in them. Or better still, put it in a talent contest with Little and Large. Who'll win? And that's from Mr. Claypole of Stevenage, which I'm sad to say is my hometown, I'm sorry to say. Is Mr. Claypole here? Oh, he's that gentleman over there with the bells and the motley, yes. Anything they like, as long as they don't put any more Perrier in them. That's from Fred. Grind them down and put them into baby food. And that's from... The Cellulite Sisters, and I shall be passing their names on to the police.
Picture this.
And now, part two of our mini-series, Destiny's Dynasty's Daughter's Desires Denied. In part one, before news at 10, two war twins were separated at birth. Now, part two.
And finally tonight, here are the main points again.
You're supposed to have finished.
Tonight, a newsreader tried to lengthen news at 10 to avoid having to watch another bloody mini-series.
When we left before the break, it was right in the middle of the compulsory miniseries Nazi interrogation scene.
So, Schweinhund, what is your name?
Donald Pemberton.
What is your rank?
Flight Commander, Royal Air Force.
And what is your specialist subject?
The stories of Beatrix Potter.
Very well. You have 2 minutes on the stories of Beatrix Potter, starting from now. Mrs. Tiggywinkle, who is she working for?
Meanwhile, in 1990, in London.
Welcome to Todgers Nightclub, Marcus. They know me here. It's my London place. Classy, sophisticated. Not quite your scene, eh, Marcus?
You know me, Craig. I'm just not in the same league as you. I never seem to get invited to those swish parties.
You're not missing much. They're like Tupperware parties, except they try and sell you curtain rails. What was it you wanted to tell me?
Well, Craig, I think that last joke died, and I think as well, someone's trying to take over Megalogigantocore.
Is that all?
No, take a look at this.
A birth certificate?
That's right.
1945, German, vellum parchment, fine print, handwritten, excellent condition. I'd say this would be worth about £200.
Oh, really? Hugh Scully told me a fiver.
Tell me about the birth certificate.
Okay, it was found in a depository in East Berlin that's been closed to Westerners since 1945. Last month it was fully discovered. Look at it closely. What's your full name, Craig?
Craig King.
What's the name on the certificate?
Krieg Kind.
That's German for war baby, Craig.
Are you saying that I was born in Germany?
There's only one way to find out for sure. Bring me a cup of decaffeinated coffee.
Ah! Kaffee Hark!
Oh, no! Why did I say that?
Here you are, sir.
Ah, smells good. Oh, my God. What's happening to me?
Caught you, Craig. Faced with the ultimate test, you lapse into your racial stereotype immediately. But there's more, Craig. Look at the certificate again.
Bunty Obergruppenführer.
Your sister.
But I didn't know I had a sister. Where is she? And what is she?
New York, Manhattan.
Julie, how's my takeover bid for Megalogigantocorp going?
We've managed to buy up 52% of all the share capital under a false name. Dodd. Bunty, I can't conceal this any longer. I love you.
Love? Ha! Get me Nora on the telecom.
The intercom's not working. There's something wrong with the Tran... sister.
Meanwhile, in another incomprehensible flashback.
So, Herr Pemberton, you think you can re... sister interrogation? Very well. Bring in Commandant von Ross.
Aha, all right. And, aha, all right. And, aha, all right. Well, welcome to an hour with Jonathan Ross. And my first guest tonight, what is your name?
Donald Pemberton.
And what is your wank?
Pardon?
In the British Army, are you high at wanking?
I'm usually fairly jolly, yes.
You've been listening to The Merry White House Experience. It was written and performed by David Vadil, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Q Dennis, Mark Thomas, Donna McPhail and Tim Firth. The sound was by Alec Hale-Monroe and the producer was Armando Iannucci.